Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Scene Reef podcast. Today, the hosts are me, George, the president of the team.
Me, Vass, the secretary of the team.
And me, Nicholas, the funding team manager and treasurer.
So, today we're going to be talking about neurodegenerative diseases. But most importantly, we're going to talk about the recent rise in the rates of neurodegenerative diseases in the later years and why it is important. What could it mean for societal factors, medical factors, clinical factors, and general discussion of why is it rising and what might cause it. But first, we would like to start with a definition for neurodegenerative diseases to get you updated in the topic. So, Vas, do you want to start with your definition?
Yeah, sure. So to define neurodegenerative diseases, Cleveland Clinic has well put it together by saying that neurodegenerative diseases are conditions that are gradually damaging and destroying parts of your nervous system, especially areas of your brain. The conditions for these diseases usually develop slowly, and the effects and symptoms tend to appear later in life.
So we say neurodegenerative diseases, plural, because there are many different types. Let's get into what are some different types of neurodegenerative disease. There is this umbrella term called dementia type diseases, which also happens to be the leading cause of death in the UK and I presume in many countries, according to the Alzheimer's Association. There are diseases such as the famous Alzheimer's disease, frontotemporal dementia, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, which is a disease that has been getting a lot of publicity lately, and I'll get onto that in a bit, and Lewy body dementia. So I just want to say a few words about CTE and what it is. CTE, once again, stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and it is a disease that is caused by repeated trauma in the head, or in other words, repeated concussions. It can develop in younger middle-aged people, and it is very prevalent in contact sports, which is something that has raised a lot of concern lately. Basically, when you experience repeated head trauma, then a key protein can develop in the brain, which is a type of tau protein, and it basically hinders the same symptoms as the other dementia type diseases, which are memory loss, problems with attention, concentration, mood disturbances, and specifically with these degrees, the behavioral changes include aggression, depression, and anxiety, and even suicidal thoughts, which is something really sad. Impulsive or erratic behavior, impaired judgment, and poor muscle coordination. So it's something that's been, it's been seen quite a lot of publicity lately, and I just wanted to raise some awareness myself about it, because I'm pretty moved by it, and I believe that we should strive for a solution for this, because it's also hard to diagnose, right? Doctors have, up to now, found out about this basically by performing autopsies on cases and finding out that the brain has become smaller, which is a symptom of neurodegeneration. And that's the most like effective diagnosis, which is not as useful because it's post-mortem. So new diagnostic methods for this kind of disease would be really helpful.
Would I be correct in saying that contact sport is like the main prevalent issue for CTE?
So the main issue is repeated head trauma, so repeated concussions, which means that contact sports are an area where there is a lot of concern about it. But any activity that could lead to repeated concussions is a factor for this.
Okay,
and
cool.
Vas, if you'd like to move on with the other types.
Yeah, so just going off what George said, the other different types of diseases could be demyelinating diseases. So these are diseases that involve damage to the myelin, which is just basically a layer that surrounds neurons and help transmit signals faster. And when there's damage to them, you have, you know, relaying and sending nerve signal like issues. And examples of these diseases could include multiple sclerosis and neuromyelitis optica spectrum. Following that, you can also have Parkinsonism type diseases. And these happen because there's damage to specific neurons in your brain. And these neurons could help you manage coordination and precise control of like muscle movements. So, going off the type of disease, you can clearly identify like Parkinson's disease is like the most prevalent form of this. But if you guys refer to the Cleveland Clinic definition of neurodegenerative diseases, they have many more examples, and the different diseases associated to these examples, and they go in depth about what are the symptoms, why can they vary so much, and other very useful information.
So, now we wanted to sort of put a microscope on Alzheimer's, a dementia-type disease, which is really famous, and talk about the specifics of what happens when somebody gets Alzheimer's. And Vas has done some comprehensive research on it, and he would like to share his knowledge.
Yeah, so just to kind of give you an overview of how Alzheimer's forms, this information is taken off the NHS. So if you guys want to read further along, NHS is a great website describing how Alzheimer's forms. But mainly, it is made up of two parts. You have the neuronal fibrillary tau tangles and the alpha beta plaques. Now, the plaques are made of a variety of th 36 to 43 residue long amyloid peptides. Peptides just being like a chain of amino acids, and they undergo fibrillarization to form these alpha beta sheets. But the issue is they're resistant to degradation, so they kind of just clump up and form these plaques inside your brain. The important thing about them is that they precede the tau tangles, which is the neuronal fibrillary tau tangles, and these are basically intraneuronal aggregates of hyperphosphorylated tau protein. To just break that down, it basically means that the protein has a phosphate group added to all possible sites of where that phosphate group can be added. And it's all encoded by this microtubule associated protein, the MAPT gene. Now, the progression of these tangles, they're categorized by Braak staging. So between stages 1 to 2, the tangles have appeared in the transentorohinal region, which is basically a connection between the entorohinal region. That's an area of your brain which recalls where you've been, and I kind of identifies like where you are right now based on previous knowledge, and the parahinal cortex, which is a part of the brain that helps you identify things that you've seen before. So, when you see a ball, you can identify, oh, this is a ball. When you've seen a watch, you can be like, okay, I know this is a watch. And the transentorohinal region is this connection between these two. So in the Braak stages of 1 to 2, the tau tangles have appeared in these sites. Between stages 3 to 4, the tangles have now spread to the limbic system. So the limbic system is kind of just the area of your brain that helps you feel emotions, remember things, and kind of just stay out of danger by identifying said danger. And they also start to appear in the neocortex. Now, the neocortex is just the outermost part of your cerebral cortex, and the final stages, so stages 5 through 6, it means that the tangle has now spread throughout the neocortex, so you can find it, the outer side of your cerebral cortex and through your cerebral cortex. The only issue is with these two proteins being identified as like, the main kind of markers of Alzheimer's disease, the issue is that they've also been identified for other neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's. So it's not enough information for doctors to identify if their patient has Alzheimer's disease. So then it's followed up by like, blood tests and cerebrospinal fluid testing, and identifying like changes in behavior and all these other complications that follow along in order to confirm if a patient has Alzheimer's disease, which then makes it really hard for a patient to come to a definitive answer like, do I have Alzheimer's or what other disease do I have?
Yeah, and I would like to say that all these are processes which are either risk-based, so they're more qualitative or quantitative, or quite invasive, like the cerebrospinal fluid. So that's why we would like, with our solution, we would like to offer something that's less invasive, but also offers a result that's clear. It's based on multiple biomarkers, so multiple detection, and you give a clear result. I also want to comment on the places where tangles are categorized by and the stages. It's interesting and kind of scary, if I might say,
Yeah, no.
to see that the places where they develop, they also show why these common symptoms that we know develop. For example, the areas where they tell you where you've been, where you recognize things and emotion, and it shows why when we have Alzheimer's, we say that it's going to become harder to remember not short-term memory things like what you ate yesterday, but more emotionally charged things from your life, and that's when concern starts.
I was gonna say, what about, do we know like in which order the tangles and plaques develop and like where they originate and stuff?
Yeah, so that's what I had mentioned. It's the alpha beta sheets, the plaques, they precede the tau tangles. So wherever they identify the tau tangles, they see the alpha beta sheets. So I'd say like an educated guess would be that they kind of form in the same regions that I had mentioned before with the tau tangles.
And it is the stages that shows them where it progresses in the brain.
Yeah, exactly. And so they use the Braak staging to kind of just identify like how far has the tau tangles progressed.
So what might cause a neurodegenerative disease? We want to show you with this segment that neurodegenerative diseases can be caused by almost an infinite amount of things. There are a lot of factors at play. So it's hard to diagnose risk-based, but we can start discussing about a few. It's a common thought that longevity is a cause of neurodegeneration, but it's not a cause, it's more likely a correlation. Because longevity, yes, it does increase the risk greatly, but not every individual above 85 has Alzheimer's, but the risk is increased. However, a cause that is identified is type 2 diabetes. And the development of type 2 diabetes and Alzheimer's are so tied that Alzheimer's has also, according to Alzheimer's ADI or Alzheimer's Association, I'll check on that soon, it's been nicknamed type 3 diabetes, Alzheimer's, because processes that take place in both are very similar. And we've seen this with the established gut microbiota connection, right? Where the health of the gut plays a role as well in correlation.
So, is there like a direct like connection between diabetes and like Alzheimer's in the sense that like the lack of insulin production causes this? Or
So, according to the Alzheimer's Society, that's the source. They state that research shows that type 2 diabetes increases a person's risk of developing dementia,
Okay.
and it also increases with the amount of length that someone has had diabetes. But it remains a risk factor still. Also, people with type 1 diabetes and severe blood sugar highs or lows are also associated with the risk of developing dementia. And you see this pattern that it's never, all these factors are never direct causes. There are
Yeah.
always risk factors because there are so many of them that take play into what it might develop. So a quantitative method will really help with diagnosis. And then there are several, quite a lot, lifestyle and environmental factors that take play into it, and societal factors, which, in order to talk about them, I believe it's better if we start talking about the rise of neurodegenerative diseases, because it's going to help us understand why these things are factors and how it's almost proven. So, Nicholas, do you want to start with a forecast of Alzheimer's for the next few
Yeah, but
years?
first I was gonna say, I think it links quite well to our project because Obviously, Scotland is renowned for having quite a general poor health compared to the rest of Europe, for example. We're known to have quite bad diets and high consumption rates of alcohol and drugs, so I believe that could be a huge influence on the development of Alzheimer's. And that makes sense because the figure of people who have dementia in 2024 in the UK is 900,000 approximately, but in Scotland it's 90,000. So for the size of the population of Scotland compared to the rest of the UK, it's quite a lot. And 3,000 of these people are up under 65.
Under 65, which is considered quite low.
Yeah, that's considered early stage. So the 900,000 is projected to rise to 1.4 million in 2040, and the Alzheimer's Society state that one in three people born today will develop dementia in their lifetime. So that's a pretty scary fact. Unfortunately, we don't know yet if we can prevent it solely through, or if it's caused solely through genetics or lifestyle has an influence as well. Hopefully, lifestyle has an influence as well, so that we can at least try and tackle that issue. So £42 billion per year is the financial burden of dementia on the UK, which is roughly split up by about 42% voluntary care by family and friends of the sufferers, 35% of social care costs, which is also paid by family members, but that's through nursing homes and stuff like that. And then 9.6 billion, which is 23%, is through healthcare costs like diagnostics and treatments and stuff like that.
Yeah, and with all this cost, judging from the forecast of growth in Alzheimer's worldwide, dementia worldwide, this cost is only going to rise, as we saw, as you
Oh,
also
of course, yeah.
projected as well, because there's a forecast on how many people are going to be living with dementia worldwide in the next few years, and they're
Okay.
saying that by 2030 it's going to be about 78 million people, whereas now it's about 50. And by 2050, it's going to be 140 million people.
Yeah, it's supposed to double every 20 years, isn't it? Or it's on trend to double.
It is sort of, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite high. I think for just financial forecasting itself, it's supposed to increase to like £90 billion for
Yeah, in
cost of
2040.
dementia, yeah, by 2040, which is quite
Yeah.
a it's a quite big number to think about, and it's just resting on, the UK's economy to support these patients. But the good thing that comes from this is that there was a study done by Alzheimer's Society and this company called CF, and they were able to identify that if we were able to improve early and accurate diagnostics, it would help cut down the cost quite a lot, which is great for us because then, we're kind of in a very niche environment, but in a very impactful environment in that sense as well, because providing a cost-effective, easy to administer method of identifying accurately, it would save a lot of lives, and it would save the government a lot of money as well.
I think the good thing about our project as well, it could probably be used as a point of care device in developing countries as well, because I believe the more research is done on it, the cheaper it will be manufacturing and stuff like that, if it's successful.
So we see all this rise in dementia and neurodegenerative diseases worldwide, and this projected rise. So with this proven, well, proven fact from the last like 10 years or so, and projected fact for the next 50 years, it leads us to think about why this is happening. And I think this is best answered by the lifestyle and societal factors. First of all, we see that the population is aging, we're seeing more and more people sort of existing in the middle to older generation than younger, which would yield higher dementia values. But we're also seeing that more cases are diagnosed. So maybe some went undiagnosed for a while. So that's why the data was low.
In the same study that I was mentioning before, they had identified that most of the cases of dementia that they're discussing might not even be representative of the whole UK, as the NHS isn't up to date with this data for the dementia for dementia. But AR UK is currently, I think, undergoing a nationwide like attempt to kind of update the data that they have and kind of. I think they're also using it for identifying, blood-based biomarkers to make diagnostics more accurate.
I just wanted to go back to what George was saying quickly. If, like you said, the middle age and older elderly people, sorry, are living, or there's more of them as like time progresses and there's less people being born, that means obviously there's going to be less people to care, less young people to care for their parents and grandparents as they age as well, which isn't good.
Yeah, and this could also play a role in the lifestyle factors, which I'm about to go into right now. So, Alzheimer's Disease International published a study last year in August about risk factors throughout the life. And one big one is cognitive engagement. People need stimuli and high amounts of cognitive engagement, which is why we see, for example, elderly people that live with their family to be less likely to develop neurodegenerative diseases, whereas usually, well, in more high-income countries, you see this tendency for families to live separated from the rest of their family. We are experiencing higher rates of dementia, but also cognitive engagement in terms of education in the early to middle-age sort of segment of the life is really important as well. Then social isolation is a factor, pollution is a factor, all those chemicals, and we've been seeing that there is an increasing rate of middle life obesity, which could also be a factor for the increasing rates of dementia.
Yeah, and it's good because these are all things, sorry, that are quite easy to change and improve your lifestyle a lot. Like, for example, the cognitive engagement one, just try and learn a new language or develop a board game that you like to play or crosswords for older people. And obviously, eating healthy is.
Yeah, I mean, we are social creatures and we need cognitive stimulation. And when we see that actually when we don't get that, we have a higher
Your
chance of
brain suffer,
developing. Yeah.
yeah.
And there was a statement that I wanted to just quote. It says that addressing neurodegenerative diseases and the lifestyle factors early in the middle life, so from 18 and onwards, has the greatest impact in reducing your chance of getting it. So it's important to get educated about all these things because it might save your life and might save your family and your loved ones.
Suffering.
Yeah, like pain,
So,
suffering.
So that's why these are societal factors that all play a role in this. Communities need to strive to be educated, to foster social connections, to foster a healthy lifestyle, which is easier in some parts of the world than others. But it is a fight that we should fight for several reasons, not just neurodegenerative diseases. But you see, it also plays a role in something like that, which is really serious.
I think as we, move forward, I think there's a lot of people bringing attention to neurodegenerative diseases, and we're just an example by having a project that's based off of it, but we're just one of many, and as we continue, hopefully governments will, realize that it's a quite important like healthcare sector that they need to worry about, And maybe we'll see some policies being implemented or, changes to how elderly care is done, I guess.
Yeah, and you see that by addressing neurodegenerative disease, you're addressing the society as a whole, because with so many factors, the society needs to be able to accommodate for the people and say that we can help you to live a healthy life and help you avoid this with education, with health lifestyles, with everything like that. And because addressing it early in the life is so impactful, that's why as a team we wanted to make our test sort of, I would say, preventative. I would, if I would say it in my own words, we want our test to be not only for the elder generation or older middle-aged generations, but also for younger people, in order to gauge their risk factor, to gauge their lifestyle, not their lifestyle, to
Yeah,
gauge the
almost like
possibility of developing something like that. We want it to be
a
available for,
warning.
yeah, to be available for a wide range of people and predict it with accuracy.
Yeah. I think as well, the fact we've chosen to tackle this issue, specifically dementia, and Alzheimer's disease, is that it's such a prevalent problem in Scotland and it's close to home. So we tend to be more passionate about it. To try and make our society a better place. Of course, the full world, but yeah.
Yes, it's a, of course, the full world, but it's best, it's good to start
It's better
local.
to, yeah, it's better to tackle problems individually and then come together with a full solution for the full world.
Yeah, so I would say this conversation would give our listeners some insight on why dementia and neurodegenerative diseases are more prevalent now, and what it means for our society and our clinical system. But it's not to mention that there are also new treatments coming out. But with all this talk in this episode, which is quite information heavy talking, we would like to keep the treatments for the next episode. So if you would like to listen us talk about potential treatments for neurodegenerative diseases, tune in for our next episode. We're just going to be talking about that. So yeah, make sure to tune to our next episode. And if you have any questions, any suggestions, any comments, do send us an email on our email contact at sinewave.co.uk. Or of course, if your application has a comment function, you can leave it there and we will read it. And we will address your comments on the next episode. Thank you for listening. This has been George and
This has been Vass.
Bye from Nicholas as well.
we hope to see you in our next episode. Yeah, see you next time.